Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today we are going to bring you the first episode of a two-part series where we talk about GALA, or the Gay and Lesbian Acceptance. We're going to then talk about Harmony, which is the organization today for the LGBT community in Community of Christ. So today we have on two of the founding members of GALA, and I'm really excited to have them. We've been chatting a little bit, and I think that their stories are going to be meaningful, and they're going to bring a lot of understanding to where the LGBT community has been in Community of Christ, and maybe give us some understanding of where we're going. So we have on Alan Fiskus as well as Ginger Farley. So, Ginger and Alan, thank you for being on today. And why don't each of you just give us a brief little overview of who you are and where you are? And we will start with Ginger.
I am a retired social worker of 40 years. I live in Kansas City. I was born and raised in Missouri, but I spent 6 years in Michigan. Running a runaway and homeless youth program in northern Michigan. So that's it. I'm retired and quite happy. I have been with my partner 23 years, and I had a previous partner who I was with 14 years.
Thank you very much. What about you, Alan?
I'm Alan Fiskus. I live in Lansing, Michigan. I've been a member of the Community of Christ my whole life. Multiple generations in my family. I'm a registered nurse, currently practicing in infusion chemotherapy, which has been a wonderful experience the last couple of years. And over the, you know, my years of traveling the world within the Navy and just my love of travel throughout the U.S. and Canada, most of it, I've also included that travel to be around church activities in various levels of activity, which I continue to enjoy when I'm allowed to do that. But it's been an up and down road, which we will go into, but we keep traveling it. So that's where we're going.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I know that both of you have a long background with Community of Christ. So I'm wondering, in your pre-GALA years, what church was like for you? And then what was church like once you came out? Did you stay involved? And then, you know, what was your general understanding of what it meant to be gay in the church?
I'm fifth generation, Reorganized Latter-day Saint, now Community of Christ. And I grew up in a small church in Odessa, Missouri, and it was my second family. I was always involved with Science League and volleyball and camps, and was very, very connected to the church and enjoyed that. And one of my greatest fears in coming out was that I would lose the church, and I did. I was very fearful I would lose my family, and I just was very clear that this is who I am. And I would, you know, I want to be as involved in the family as I can, but if it's not, if you can't accept it, because I was with my partner then. I didn't come out and openly until I was with a partner because I didn't need to. You know, nobody needed to know. But when you're with someone, you want it to be valued and accepted. And so that's when I came out to my parents and I gave them time. I wrote them a letter, and I gave them time, and their response was, "You're our daughter. We love you." So I was okay with that. They didn't understand, and it took them a long time to accept. But I will say my mother has been a good advocate.
My journey with the Community of Christ Reorganized Latter-day Saints has been lifelong. As I said before, both sides of my family, third and fourth generation. Growing up, most of my wonderful memories have always been going to church, Zion's League, Zion Ears. When we were at home, we had to travel 20 some miles to church. If we visited my grandparents, we were always involved in whatever was going on with the church youth at that time, whether it was here in Lansing or up north in Alpena. So whenever our families got together, it was always included church, after church, singing around the piano, whatever. So much of what we did was church related. The youth camp was very important to me growing up. The one thing I always knew and I couldn't understand growing up is that I was very different. Couldn't figure it out. It was years later that in talking with my mom, and I think it's timely, it kind of revolved around what was going on with the Stonewall rioting 50 years ago. And I was about 12 years old then. And I was talking to my mom about what in the world's going on with this. And that's kind of when I first heard the terminology that all of a sudden the lights went on going, oh my God, that's who I am. Because I'd been having, if you want to say same-sex feelings for years, but just didn't understand them. Because of what was going on in my community life, for me, the church was a sanctuary. We were the only family in our neighborhood that was community of Christ, and everyone else was around us that was Lutheran and Catholic. So there was some kind of, for me, a feeling of religious persecution because I never fit in. I never fit in with anyone in the community. But it was when I got to church that I was safe. And that continued all the way through growing up. I was called to the priesthood when I was 15 years old to the office of deacon. So that started my priesthood journey within the church. I actually came out as a gay man on a mountaintop in Korea while I was in the Navy. It's the first time I actually told somebody. And over my time in the Navy, I actually was out, which was surprising in the 70s. I had a partner for a couple of years. And the interesting thing was, it was not a secret. People knew, but because of what was going on in our work relationship, our productivity, everything was fine. And I found out later that even people at the church there on Okinawa knew what was going on, but nobody did anything about it.
That was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, very much so. It wasn't until I came home from the Navy that I started having issues with the church. And it happened to be one lady who had been after me as a young man, wanted to have a relationship with me, and I was not interested. And she started pursuing that when I get out of the military. She stopped by the house one time and my front door was open and she heard me in a very emotional conversation with my partner, Michael, at the time. And she appeared to be very supportive and understanding that we were dealing with separation and stuff from Okinawa and Michigan. And it was a few weeks later, I got a visit from my pastor asking for my priesthood. And then that got into a big involved disaster. And for me, I ended up leaving the church for a while because every time I tried to go to church, people were angry at me because I wasn't doing things I'd always done. Playing for the church, preparing things for church, youth camps, whatever. So I was kind of driven away from the church for several years until I was guided, how I feel spiritually guided, to the people there in Kansas City, where I had my first church contact in many, many years, where Gala really pretty much saved my life because I, at that point, was very close to a suicide state of mind because of not living the life I wanted to be, which is at that time very active in the church. So then that kind of throws me back into how I met Ginger and the whole gang down there.
Thank you both for sharing those chapters of your stories. I know that, Alan, your story is in the book Homosexual Saints, and I just reread it again before we had this interview, and I've read the whole thing cover to cover, and there were some some pretty intense things that were happening to the gay community within the church. And so I can understand why GALA needed to exist. But before we get into that, I'm just curious if there were any, what was the historical buildup, I guess, to GALA? I'm curious to know, was there any sort of support system in place before GALA? Or no. There wasn't at all?
No, nothing.
That's very isolating. I can only imagine how being told that being gay is wrong and bad in from your church and then not being able to connect with anyone like you within the church.
I mean, it was hard to find people. My partner, Myra, was at, I think, a gathering, maybe at Arthur's house. Mm-hmm. And she met Mike and Alan. And they had got in touch with Arthur because they were RLDS. And I don't know whether, I don't remember whether they knew Bob Swaffer or not, but they definitely knew Arthur. And she came home and said, I met these two guys. They're also in the church. They know these other guys. Let's all get together. So we did. And we met Bob, and we went out to Lake Tacoma a couple of times and had picnics. And we just kept getting together. And it was, it really wasn't planned like monthly, but if something was going on at Arthur's, he would call us and invite him and vice versa. And then around conference time. Did you come down at conference? Is that the first time you met us?
No, it would have been your conference time, probably around 1984. My understanding is when there were some contact made with the Canadian people.
I think so. And that was either through Arthur or through Mike and Alan. But Bob had contacted the Affirmation Group from the Mormon Church, because there was a small group in Kansas City, and we thought we could all meet together, and we did once or twice, and that didn't seem to fit. It was just one man that came. He was the one trying to keep Affirmation going, and it was just dying on the vine. So,
Affirmation is the gay and lesbian support group for the Mormon Church.
Right.
And they've been in existence for a long time, so...
But it was not going very strong in Kansas City. And I can't, again, I don't remember. Most of it was around Arthur, who knew people and said, oh, by the way, we have these other people. And Myra and I were the only two women in GALA for a very long time. And, you know, as a woman, even in a couple, you don't have to come out. Because two women living together for financial reasons made sense to people. They've done it for years. And so it's easier to hide. Well, given my personality, I don't hide well. If I'm in love with someone, you're going to probably pick that up really very quick. And I don't want to hide, you know? I was on a gay softball team, and at that point, nobody on the team knew that I was gay, but I was a good softball player. And so a friend of mine said, come play softball with us. And it wasn't too long after that that she figured out that it, and you know, I never wanted to be gay, but my feelings were for women. I liked the guys, but they were always my buds. They were my friends. They were my pals. So it was a hard beginning to try and connect, and it had to be very quiet. You know, because at that time, people were losing their jobs if they came out because of HIV.
And at the beginning of the AIDS crisis.
Yes.
At the time, we were dealing with the church issues.
And we were losing friends quickly. my partner and I got trained at the AIDS service organization in Kansas City to be a buddy. And we knew that some of the people we had met in Gala were HIV positive. And Bob was beginning to be ill. And so we wanted to be able to be there to help. And it was hard, to be honest, because finding acceptance for people who were gay and now had the gay plague was almost impossible. And the church didn't want to even talk about AIDS. And they did finally have a health consortium group, whatever, and I was invited to come and talk about AIDS. But that was sometime later. But it was really, I was ashamed of my church, to be quite honest. I never believed. They had always said, you are all welcome. All are welcome, except you. And quite honestly, it irritated me. That's the kindest way I can say it. It was a little stronger than that. But it was so good to find other people in the church who were looking for support. And that's how Gala got started.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was literally a group of friends that just were getting together for picnics and, you know, to hang out every other month, every month, and an official support group that has lasted decades formed through that.
My first experience when I came down to Kansas City, some people from Toronto stopped by, picked me up here in Michigan, and we traveled down to Kansas City together. So I got to know people on the trip down and then get down to Kansas City. And here I am now feeling like I'm the only gay person in the world, now surrounded by a couple dozen gay and lesbian people, plus advocates. We had a strong network of people that were advocating for us. And I remember that first evening coming into Mike and Alan's home, having a dinner and everything. And then all of a sudden people are gathering around the piano singing church hymns. Yep. And oh my God, can we sing? Oh my gosh, before we started this, I sat down at my organ and played some of the hymns I remember us singing. Hmm. Just to get my head ready for tonight, you know, I just felt like doing it. the music we put together was spontaneous, heartfelt, emotional, and we would cry during it, mainly because the feeling of loss. I mean, most of us, when we get together and talk about our stories and how we got to when I shared my story with the group there in Kansas City, this huge sense of loss of something in your life that you've grown up with could not be filled by going to other churches.
No.
Or other support groups from other faiths. They just didn't do it. For me, the wonderful thing about meeting the people there in Kansas City that time was some of the people that were advocates were in church leadership, and they said, "Alan, why were you even silenced? You didn't do anything wrong." You know, and they had me start doing some investigating, which subsequently over several years, I ended up getting my priesthood restored because it had not been a legal silencing. For me, I felt a little strange because about the time I started getting into Gala, I had also cracked the doors of going back to church back in my hometown area. And so the two things were nicely blended, because as I'm doing my investigation to see why I was silenced, I was also getting kind of edging my way back into my congregation And so the leadership there were going, well, oh my gosh, now we understand why people are saying what happened to Alan, you know, and further things that went on, you know, people had never supported my silencing, but I didn't know that for many, many years. For me, it was strange because I had this undying faith that this church had a purpose in the gay community. But then as I'm talking with some of the gay people who are so angry at the church, I felt like I was a traitor to the gay community. At the same time, oh, I hate my church because of what they did to me. It was kind of a weird, weird position to be in, you know, because there were times a couple of people there in the meetings would say, why are you even going to church anymore when they're doing all this stuff to you? And it's just like, I just can't give up. And so for me, it's just been that constant battle, I guess, to put the issue to the church. So,
and God love you, because I gave up the battle after about 15 years because I just couldn't keep doing it. But my partner and I kept going to church because she had two children. And we wanted to make sure they had church. And I became the singles director of Santa Fe Steak, because that's the closest thing we matched with, was singles. Because there was no place for us to be a couple in the church at all. And we had a commitment service. And it got back to the pastor of the church, because we had friends there who were part of that congregation. And he asked me, did you have the service at the church? I said, no, I wouldn't do that. The church doesn't allow that. But yes, we had a service. We had it privately at a clubhouse where we were living. And then I resigned from being the stake singles leader, because it in one hand it was living a lie, on the other hand it was trying to fill a void for everybody, and it just didn't fit very well. But we did some good things with it, and I think that's why the need for gala was so clear, because we didn't fit anywhere. Yeah. We could hide, but I don't want to hide, and neither did she. But there was no place to go. From the very beginning of gala, we knew, from before it was ever called gala, we knew we would need straight allies. And we had a lot of them. One of my best friends and where we lived, she was an older woman. Matter of fact, her son was in Korea the same time Alan was, I think. Was Ruth's son there then? Mm-hmm. Glenn?
Yeah, Glenn and I actually served together in Okinawa.
That's so what I thought.
I knew Glenn before I actually got involved with Gala many years later, and his mother. So
that was one of the things we knew. We needed straight allies in the church, because they were not going to be listening to us. So we had to have people who said, well, that's crazy. It's crazy to be silenced because of who you love.
Right. The one thing that came up too, Ginger, in that initial meeting we had in Michigan with the church leadership from the first presidency, when they told us that we could not use the church name in anything, but they also said, we get it. We know that there's ministry that needs to be done, you know, because they'd interacted with us enough over a short time. And they said, the thing is, it's got to come from the grassroots. It can't come from the top. And that was kind of a strange thing to get wrapped around, because for so long you grow up with everything that's important at the top of the church. Age shows you that you need to work at the groundworks level and work with the top of the church. But for them, their suggestion was that things had to we had to start it all rolling, pretty much is what was said. Church leadership could not do it. They could not simply say, hey, people, we're going to start this. It would not have worked. It had to come from the people to start the groundwork. And I think that's pretty much what we did, both with the allies and for those people that were willing to step up and say, hey, people, this is my church and I want my church. It was not easy.
Well, there was a lot of resistance from the top. I went to talk to an apostle I knew personally, and he said, well, you know, the standing is you can't be practicing. And it's like, would you say that to any other couple? No. You know, we're in a committed relationship. We've been in this relationship at that time, probably 4 or 5 years. We don't plan to change that. But you can't be practicing, which means you can't have sex. Let's just call it what it is. And I'm a bit radical at times. And I looked him in the eye and I said, I'm not practicing. I know how to be a lesbian. And I walked out.
Ginger.
I did.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting in my beginning with Gayla and coming back to the church after being gone for about 4 years. I had started a relationship with a church member, and he had been divorced and had 3 children. And so during the times when we were together on weekends and he had custody of the kids, David and his kids would come to church with me, or when we went to David's congregation, I would go with David and the kids. And it got to the point where if David and the kids were not with me at church, hey, is everything okay with you guys? Is there anything wrong? So it was kind of a weird development, you know, of when the congregation started putting things together and, you know, supported us and wanted us to know that we were okay, which was pretty amazing. But then when I actually stopped and look at the congregation I grew up with and had at the time, I was very blessed with those people. It was 10 years later that another young man from that same congregation came up to me at a retreat, and I saw him and my mouth hit the ground, and he said, if it hadn't been for you and what you did for the congregation, I could never have come out. That always stuck with me, because not knowing that here's this young man watching what's going on changed his life, you know. And over the years, I've heard that many times in the public speaking I've done around Michigan region at the time. We were doing workshops called Homosexuality in Our Faith. It was a program that the Michigan region leadership and I put together because we were starting a dialogue on what was really going on with the history of the gay people in the church and what the church rules were and la-di-da-di-da. So we went around, I think we did 12 different seminars throughout the region, and it was quite interesting. Every group was different, but we could always count on those that were Bible thumping against what we were sharing. And then there were other peoples that you knew that they were kind of like in the middle. And then you had people who had been dying to hear some positive things about the gay community. And so a lot of growth went on from those programs. And there again, we were using people from Gayla to kind of fill in as some of the guest speakers on some of those events.
One of the ironies is it's very hard in the Independence, Kansas City area to get a lot of support. because the church has to take a certain stance. When you're farther away from the church, your congregations can kind of do what they want. But it's harder when you're here. And I think the biggest irony is every time we had a conference, Gala had a gathering. We knew conference time was coming and we would set aside a time. And we invited 70s and apostles and friends who we knew who had gay children, but nobody was out. Our whole goal was to heal the brokenhearted who had been in the church and lost their church. And they could be gay and open and gala, and we worshiped like RLDS. And we didn't, you know, there is other gay congregations, but they're not like us. We are a different people. That's the whole point. They just didn't know how different we were. But we used their format to make gala work. And then individual areas had their own gala group. We had one here in Kansas City. Myra and I were the hosts of it for a long time. And then we had to go to, we moved to Michigan. But we had a gala retreat in Michigan, and Myra and I came down from up north and we went to that. And we always had, we usually had a retreat on Labor Day because that's, Canada had a holiday then. And sometimes it was in Canada or sometimes it was here. And it grew and grew. It grew from a very small, probably when we started, we had about 8 at the table who were drawing up bylaws and saying, this is what we want to do. We had a post office box and we put announcements in the gay papers that if you are RLDS and you're gay and you want to talk to somebody, and Alan took a lot of those calls. We didn't, I was.
Which Alan?
You.
Oh, okay.
You took a lot of the calls. Not Alan.
Alan did, I think, when it was in the Kansas City area.
Yeah.
And then when we switched leadership, and it came back to me. The one thing Ginger brought up, how we would worship together whenever we did get together, whether Kansas City or Toronto, we followed what we grew up learning to how to worship, you know, and it also carried over on how we developed our kind of our mini retreats. When we were first allowed to use church facility for a retreat, mainly because we were getting too big to hold them in somebody's home anymore, we needed more space. I took the concept to the leadership in Michigan at the time, and we did get permission to use a campground with the caveat that they were going to send someone from the church leadership in Michigan to be there to witness what really was happening. And that was newly ordained High Priest June Freeman and her husband Ron were to be kind of the mental overseers, and it's how I had it at the time, of what was happening. But when they got there, they were not prepared for what they ended up being a part of. One, how the retreat kind of followed any other retreat the church did in formatting. The one thing that was a little different is we shared our stories in kind of a round circle, round table event. And the amount of hurt and anger that came through that, and almost kind of directed at June because she was a church leader at the time, was unreal. I mean, considering, except probably I think for Ginger and Myra and a couple other females that were there.
But they were straight friends.
They were straight friends, but all of the other people there had been silenced gay members of the church because women in the priesthood had just started. But so I think we had like 14 male people there that all had been silenced because they were gay and felt shoved out of their church in the anger and the hurt. And Ron and June just loved us. They hugged us, loved us. And when it came down to sharing their story, they shared some amazing tragedy they had just gone through. And then, boy, how this group just rallied around them. We had an amazing experience that weekend, mainly because for me, I came home to a campground I used as a youth, and I felt for the first time fully free because I was me, I was in my church, and I was gay, and I could be around other gay people on the campground, and I could hold my friend's hand and not be afraid of it. One of the other young men that happened to be there that weekend for the first time is somebody I had gone to youth camp with, and when we saw each other, we just hugged and hugged. Oh, if I'd only known, if I'd only known. You know, here we are growing up together in youth camps, and we didn't know because we couldn't say anything. That was a big turning point, I think, for the church and for Gala, because when Ron and June took back their stories to the church leadership, they started their own momentum supporting what we were trying to do, sharing their stories of what had happened. And I know Ron and June took so much guff from people who just could not believe that the gay people had anything to offer the church. We did, the following year, we had no problem having the campground again. And since then, really, we've never had an issue getting church campgrounds for retreats. Sometimes it's just booking issues, but I think the only other time that there was any real flack about Gala using a church campground was at Camp Bountiful a number of years ago. And myself and Lauren and Kelly had been invited to be guest ministers at a Bountiful reunion. And also we had Grant McMurray at the time there. And so we were able to share our stories during just a regular reunion experience. And in our planning to use Bountiful for that Labor Day weekend, some flack started coming up and people were going to boycott us and not allow us even to enter the campground. Well, when that word got around to the leadership for the regions that use that campground, all of a sudden the church leadership all decided to come to the retreat too. Oh. And it was also the retreat Grant McMurray was attending. It was the first time a church president attended a Gala retreat. Interestingly enough, no one boycotted the entrance to the campground. And here we had three district, or I mean regional presidents all here to take on their people, and nobody showed up, but ended up having a phenomenal worship experience all weekend with them.
One of the things about Gala, there were some tenets that have lasted through the years. One is your story is important and nobody makes fun of it. Anyone who wants to come is welcome, even if they come with painted fingernails and gray, you know, color in their hair. We've had some pretty wild folks come, and that's okay too. We've had handicapped folks who weren't gay but found that they were accepted in this group. Anybody who has ever been to a retreat has said they have received love. And that's all the purpose was, is to heal the folks who were broken with love. And you could be open, whatever that meant for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in sharing our stories, it's just a testimony. It's like the Wednesday night testimonies I grew up with.
Yeah.
Except we were sharing hurt instead of joy, or instead of it, and need, hurt and need. And what we got back was love.
Right.
Yep. Well, I'm sure being able to tell your stories in that safe environment with people who understand your religious background and how deeply you want to be involved with ministry. I mean, if you know, it sounds like this particular retreat, Alan, that you're talking about, realizing that there were that many men that had been silenced. I mean, we're talking, that's church leadership that's being silenced, congregational district level leadership. And I think that telling our stories in that kind of environment was probably very, very impactful. And very healing. I really like that you have used the word healing, Ginger.
Yeah. I think that's where healing began for a lot of people, was the fact that they could just yell and scream and be angry at the church and get their feelings out and cry and everything. Once you get that, if you want to say poison out of your body, the anger and stuff, and then you get other people that are there nurturing you and supporting you, and then maybe saying, okay, what do you now want to do or don't do? You know, because over the years, there are people that have left the church but will come to the Gala retreat because it's still what they consider their foundation of spirituality. Mm. And it still is, it's bound to how we grew up in the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, for me, thus Community of Christ. And that's just it. They have not lost their faith. They've lost maybe their faith in what the community can do to people. Sometimes by omission, sometimes definitely commission of bad services directed towards, you know, casting out sinners. I mean, I've seen that done in the congregation after we've been there. I mean, in the building, and then people will come behind us and have a exorcism of the church, kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But yet, you know, every conference, we couldn't wait for World Conference because every night of the week, somewhere the Gala group was getting together somewhere in somebody's house to meet together, to share together in whatever way we could.
Potlucks are an excellence. I mean, yeah. You get gay boys together, you get good food.
Yeah. RLDS through and through.
Amen.
Latter-day Saints definitely carried on. The thing also that eventually our momentum was public enough that the church couldn't deny what we were doing, mainly because there were church leaders watching what we were doing, being quietly behind the scenes, giving us advice, and watching how it was developing. Luckily, I think in a lot of ways, in Michigan has been more progressive than the World Church headquarters there in Independence, that we've been able to do things like the workshop of homosexuality in our faith, and getting the conversation out there, getting the stories out there. The one thing that I heard from one of the church leaders was how they had gone to a region to talk about the subject and came back and said, I should have taken you with me because all I can do is share someone else's story. It doesn't have the impact when it's now a face-to-face issue. I'll never do that again. Mm. And I was always invited to go with this person to share my story when they were tackling the issue wherever they were in their region at the time. I guess, you know, for me in all of this journey, I've never given up faith in the God that I believed in. And over the years, I've met many, many people because of the journey of being thrown out and coming back and meeting Gayla and getting the strength and support I needed to then put my face out there in my own region. Sometimes going into, I had a phone call from World Church, hey, there's somebody that's in crisis. Will you please go to California and see them? But we didn't ask you to do this. And it was like, okay, how do I make this happen? Well, that's up to you. So it's like, we need you to go do ministry, but you're doing it on your own. And it was like, okay. And we figured it out. You know, we had some people get together and Dave and I took off and we went to California and met the people they asked us to meet. And there again, a whole another kitten caboodle of stuff going on in California started. So a lot of what Gayla has done very, very much at the beginning was on our own, and for many, many years. But as the momentum grew, we definitely started getting support from local leaders and even at the higher levels, but it was more behind the scenes, suggesting meeting with us quietly behind doors to hear what we were doing, not what other people telling us we were doing. It made it hard to do putting yourself out there, but but when people came up and said, if it wasn't for you, I would not be here today, kind of wipes off all the bad stuff and gives you the energy to keep moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
I still went to the retreats. I quit going to church on a regular basis. I finally got over being angry with the church. I was so frustrated because they just lie about who they were when they say all are welcome, and then that means all. It doesn't mean all but you or all but you or all but you. And I was angry, especially since I was so grounded in the church and did things in the church. Both my parents were elders in the church and pastors at one point or another. And it was like, you know who I am. It doesn't change who I am. And that was the whole purpose of Gayla, to be able to be who you are with church people, because our church is different. I've been with Margaret 23 years, and she still doesn't understand how we believe what we believe. The golden plates have her stumped, I'm just telling you. So
I think they have a lot of people stumped.
So. Yeah, they do. She has gone to church with me when we go down to my parents. She supports what I wanted to do with the church. The fact that I was at conference, the last conference, at one of our Gayla meetings here at our house, one of the women came up to me and said, Ginger, when will you come back to the church? I said, when the church changes its stance on gays. And this is the first conference I attended a worship service at since I left 15, 20 years ago. Now, I stayed in touch, and my names are on the books because I'm telling you, they won't listen if you're not a member. So if I wanted to have a say, I had to stay in the church, and I didn't want to leave the church. I didn't feel like I left the church. I felt like the church threw me away. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Gayla allowed us to heal that. And I think for a lot of people, we were their only connection to the church in a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, we were grounded in the church. And the hymns are a big part of it. We love to sing. And we love to have fun and have campfires because we all grew up doing that. And so we did it at Gayla Retreats. And it was very healing for many, many people. whether they stayed in the church or they didn't was not our issue. And it, my issue was never whether the church accepted it or not, because at that point, I didn't think we'd ever get where we are now. It took 37 years.
Yeah.
I wore out before then.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, is as all of this was happening, and you were meeting at conference, et cetera, and I don't know, it sounds like kind of having backdoor support with some of the leadership, maybe on a local or larger level. But did you ever imagine that the church would be actually welcoming? I know that the word affirming might be controversial, and we don't need to get into that. But did you ever think that the church would be accepting of gay relationships, of gay marriage, and ordination and that kind of thing?
I always knew individuals in the church would be, because there was, again, a different apostle who came to our home and had dinner with us and was very accepting. So there were parts of the leadership who were absolutely supportive. But did I think we'd ever get, well, okay, so let me say this. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah.
I think we're farther along than we ever have been, but I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah. I am remembering conversations of at the beginning that one of our ideas is that we hope that at some point in time, gay love will not need to exist within the church.
Absolutely.
That the church will grow into what we always thought the church could be. I honestly never expected to be where we are today in the church in my lifetime. I really didn't.
But thank God you didn't give up. Some of us did.
It was, I carried the anger for a long time. Even after my priesthood was reinstated, I still kind of felt like I had to watch my back all the time, because when my priesthood was reinstated, the relationship I had with David had ended. Trying to be international in relationship building does not work when you can't get status to move cross borders. So part of that time frame that came through for me, my priesthood was reinstated and I was single again. And the apostle was asking me, you know, the question, are you in a relationship? And I said, well, no, but. And he says, I don't want to hear but. I just want to know, are you in a relationship right now? And I said, no, but. He says, stop saying but. And he says, let me sign the paperwork and then we'll continue the conversation. And
that's the don't ask, don't tell part of the church.
Yeah, pretty much. And he said, okay, paperwork signs, you know, your priesthood's been reinstated. He says, okay, now what did you want to say? And I said, well, okay, my thing was, if you're going to give me my priesthood back, that's fine, but you're never going to get it again. I have the right to have a loving, committed relationship with somebody. And I hope to, at some point in my life, have that. And he says, and I agree with you, you do. But it may take time. And I agreed with that. Also, for me, in my faith journey, in prayer, and definitely praying and faith believing, I had been frustrated about the loneliness of relationships in my life. And it came across to me, in whatever form you want to say, more in my head, that you have a path to take. You can continue to work down the road with the church to continue the awareness, bringing this to the church, or you can have a relationship. But at this point in time, you can't have both. And it was like, what? You know, and then did a workshop and heard some responses from people that, because they were asking me the same thing, are you in a relationship right now? And I said, no. And they said, oh, okay. And later on, I asked one of the ladies why she asked me that question. And she says, well, I've known you a long time. I can't get around the fact that you might be in bed with a man. But because you're not right now and everything that you shared with me, I have an easier time of hearing. And so I kind of got the message that, okay, I might have a lonely road for a while, but this is the journey that I can take, or I can take another one. Luckily enough for me, my foundation, my support system was my congregation I was with at this time, and also my foundation of Gala people that I could call and talk with and cry with and have the strength to again go on to the next workshop, you know, because putting yourself out there, sharing your story, and listen to people who say that I was lying or I'm worthless and, you know, I should be stoned and tired. And I mean, over the years, I've heard it all. But yet, to see where we are today, we're not completely there yet.
Because
when I talk with people who ask about my church and they say, well, if I want, I live in this city, if I go to your church there, will I be welcome? I don't know yet. I don't know those people, you know, because there was times even within my own metropolitan area here in Lansing, we had at that time five congregations, and people would ask me that question. I could say, well, you can go to this congregation or this one, but not the other three. Well, that doesn't make people outside feel very secure. I think our numbers are growing within the faith community now, where optimistically, I can say to people that our church is trying to grow into it. When I go to different churches in my travels, I have never been rejected walking in the door. There again, I don't go in waving my rainbow flag or anything. But there's also been times I've walked into congregations in places I've never been before, and someone comes up, oh, I've always wanted to meet you. I've heard your story. I've read your story, you know, and then totally enveloped in love and caring by somebody. That's what I have the hope for the future, that our churches will just simply be welcoming whoever walks in the door.
Yeah, and I guess I always thought they were. And then I found out, because my congregation that I grew up in, like I said, was a second family. Yeah. And everybody knew me and everybody liked me and I was okay. And I had questions about it when I first got into a relationship. And Myra and I were going, we met at Singles Reunion, and we were going to go back to Singles Reunion. And I made it a matter of prayer. And I talked to God pretty much like I talked to everybody else. And I said, now, look, God, I need to know whether this is okay with you. I really need to know that. Now, if you tell me it's not, I'm not telling you I'm getting out of the relationship, because I don't know that I can do that, but I need to know. And at Singles Reunion, we were in a class together, and there was a high priest who was teaching the class who was also a psychologist. And I guess the day before we were leaving, he came up to us and he said, I want a hug from you two. And so I hugged him and she hugged him, and he said, no, I want a hug from the both of you. And he put his arms around both of us and he said, I have been ministered to by the love you show to each other. And I want to tell you a story. I had a man in my counseling who had never known the passion or the, had never known love, period. And he left my counseling and he came back about a year later and he said, Roger, I know what love is. I'm in love. And Roger said, well, tell me. And he said, it's with a man. And in the way he talked to God, he said, God, how could you do this to me? And God spoke back to him and said, and how are you to share my love? How are you to limit how I share my love? And he said, from that day to this, he never had a problem with it. And that was my answer. I knew I would get my answer at Singles Reunion, and that was my answer. Who are you to tell me how I should share my love?
Right.
And I've been okay. God and I have been okay from that time to this. I was okay with God before that. I've had 3 miraculous healings. So I knew God loved me. But could he love me if I was in a relationship with a woman? Now, this is the thing that early on in your gay life you don't think about. But it's like, could God love me if he knew he was gay? If he knew I was gay? Well, God created you. God knows you. Guess what? He knows you're gay. And it's like when that little light comes on, it's like, oh, yeah. But that's what a lot of folks, especially younger folks, were struggling with. Now, I have to tell you, a conference running the booth this time, there was a lot of healing that went on for me. This little guy from New Zealand came up and said, what's this Harmony booth about? And I told him it was about gay and lesbian acceptance. And he thought that was the coolest thing. And he said, I want to take your stuff and pass it out because I think it's just crazy that not everybody accepts it. And I thought, we have come a long way, baby. Mm-hmm. And he was probably 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was just on it. And it was like, all right, there, I have hope.
Yeah.
I have hope again.
Yeah. And that's just it. Over the years, you know, like doing, when we were able to do conference booths, you know, you'd get people that would just come up and just harangue you because you were there and how evil you were and you know, all this kind of stuff. And I remember several years of doing the booth at conference, and this one high priest would come up every year and just berate me and just go on and on and on about how evil it all was. And, you know, I learned over the time that I just let people talk and share their feelings and thank you for sharing your feelings, you know, and I let it go because arguing gets nowhere. I just allow them to vent and thank you for sharing. You know, I'll answer some questions. But I won't get into a debate. And so every conference for several years, this guy would come in and do this, boom, every single time. Oh, you're here again. I'm still here. And he started his tirade. And so, okay, you know, I just got used to it. Thanks again for sharing, you know, and off he'd go. Then the last time I saw him, it was in actually the entryway of the auditorium, and I saw him mentally going, oh God, here we go again. And I'm just kind of looking up at the heavens, and all of a sudden this guy's coming towards me and he says, are you here again? And I said, yep, I'm here again. He says, good, because I need you. I need you to be here to help me grow. And he shook my hand and turned and walked away.
Hallelujah.
Wow.
You know, you get these moments that just blow you away and in a lot of ways reaffirm the value of people, even though their journey is much different than yours or mine. And the biggest thing that I have told people over the years, even within Gala, and when people are struggling about coming out to their families and everything else, and it was one of the things I've heard other people say is, how long did it take you to come out of the closet? And some said, oh, you know, 10 years, whatever. And I said, okay, your family, your friends, your congregation gets the same amount of time.
Yeah. Give them a break.
Yeah.
They need time.
And some people don't have the patience for that, but it's like, stop. You needed to get to a point where you felt safe, so do they. You know, but you're going to be there to make their journey easier. And I think that's what we have done in the foundation of Gala, is we have given a foundation of safety, love and nurturing, security, confidentiality, because we still have people who are not comfortable with the church knowing, yeah, I want to know what's going on. I still believe in the church. I still go to church, but nobody in the church knows about me and they can't know about me. My family can't know about me. So we have to keep them confidential within the gala umbrella.
Well, it's a scary walk. Yeah. None of us would have chosen to be the most hated people on earth.
Yeah.
None of us. And, you know, people say it's a choice. Your only choice is whether you accept and find a loving relationship or you don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to live without love.
That's fair. That's really fair.
I think really that for the years that I've been involved, I came into it in 85, and over the years have watched a massive amount of pain and suffering. Healing, growth, painful growth, angry growth. But there again, there's always been a niche of people at the right place, the right time, to give the love and support to the gala groups that have been trying to do something in their local areas. And then as we continue to move up, working more and more openly with the church leaders from ground levels to higher levels to higher levels, to be able to be hand in hand at an event with the presidency or side by side, you know, whatever, to show that we are loved, we are acknowledged. And one of the amazing things that happened for me was at a regional conference here in Michigan, and I was asked to share my story. And as I was done sharing my story, a woman got up and was saying, "How could you? How could you do this to your family? How could you embarrass your family like this? And, oh, you know, I've known your family for years," and la, 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 la. And, oh, they must be just crying and crying and crying. And I said, "Well, I really can't respond to this, but my family's in the front row here. Why don't you talk to them?" And my grandmother stood up and turned around and looked at the lady and says, "I have no reason to be ashamed of my grandson. I love him. I always have, and I always will. And, you know, you can't judge him." You know, she would, oh, my grandmother was just irate. And Ginger knows my grandmother. And afterwards, you know, the lady sat down and because she also made something about how embarrassing it is to the church for me to be doing sharing my story. And the apostle Jim Slaughter was there on the dais and stood up next to me. And he says, "Well, to respond to your comment about embarrassing the church," and he put his arm around me and said, "Alan is my brother and I love him."
Yeah.
That totally, totally, you know, my family stepping up, you know, Jim stepping up, you know, and publicly saying, I think that was the final catalyst where I had no more anger at the church. And it was probably a few months later that I had been called to the office of elder. Well, I knew I had been called, but it was just taking a very long time for it to go through.
Well, I figured I'd never be called to the priesthood because, well, if I was, they would just call me to silence me because it's the only way they could shut me up. But that aside, my mother, who is an elder, lives in Branson, and they went to the Branson congregation, and she was in a Sunday school class. I don't even know what it was on, but the subject of gay and lesbians came up, and a man there said, "You know, they're all pedophiles. They just want little boys and girls." And my mother got irate, and she said, "I have a son who's gay, and you know Ginger. And she and her partner come here to church when they're down here. And you are talking about my children, and neither one of them, are pedophiles. As a matter of fact, 95% of all pedophiles are white men. And I'm going, whoa, mama, she made it. She has been real outspoken about that. She said, it's ridiculous. She said, my son has been with his partner over 25 years. And Ginger, is, at that time, I guess I'd been with Margaret maybe 13, 14 years. She said, you know, they are monogamous. They don't sleep around. And they're good people. And it was like, okay. And the woman next to her said, well, none of my marriages lasted that long. And it was like, okay. So, I mean, you do get a point where you can heal and say it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it took me a long time to get over being angry with the church. I still don't understand what took them so long. I mean, it just is, I'm a social worker. So I accept people as they are, whoever they are. And that's just my makeup. That's probably why I'm a social worker. Because I want to help people. And we're all on a journey. And if we can find love, oh my gosh, what a great gift. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me as good Christians to say, well, love is bad for you.
Yeah.
One of the questions I'm looking at, just to bring that into it, Brittany, gala retreats have been active in some form at least once a year, probably since 1984.
Yes.
They have been allowed to be on church property since 1988. They have been all over the United States and Canada, sometimes more times at one campground than another. We used to kind of go like the West Coast, Kansas City, East Coast, back to Kansas City, West Coast, kind of gambit for a while, but now it seems to be where we can find a campground that we can get into and where people are willing to host out of their areas. I know that this Labor Day weekend, we are coming up on another retreat at Camp Bountiful in Ohio. So the retreats have been the international ones, technically right around the Labor Day weekend area, more out of tradition. But there's also been regional retreats, like in the California area, where they would do something mainly geared to the people that lived in the California area. But everyone was welcome. Didn't matter if you were out of California, anyone could come. We've had retreats in Michigan where we took our people and we went to Kirtland Temple. And we've had a couple of retreat events at Kirtland Temple. We
had a retreat in Toronto.
Yep. Multiple places, I think, in Ontario and throughout the United States, all over. So the retreat aspect of things will continue because a lot of times it's a safe environment for people to come to who need to be inconspicuous. During the conference time, gala has things going on multiple days during the week, evening events. And a lot of times there were people when they were just traveling would say, hey, I'm going through your area. Can we spend the night? You know, and boom, you'd have a house full of people from Toronto that were on their way to Kansas City or wherever, or vice versa. Kansas City people were on their way to Toronto, so Lansing was a good stopping spot, you know. And so that was always fun. The wonderful thing about what has gone on over the years and the way gala has become public is there's been a network of people within gala, both gay, lesbian, now transgender, bisexual, and the allies. We've had a network of people that have been willing to go out into the church community and share their stories. You had a question about WCN, Welcoming Community Network. My activity with that's been really limited. but it was a way to teach people how to become welcoming congregations, and that's a tool that is still out there. Welcoming community congregations need to, the congregations themselves need to be taught how to be welcoming. And the gay community kind of spurred this, but a lot of times the congregation then takes on, okay, how do we become more welcoming to the ethnic communities or the divorced or whatever. It's a tool that can be used for congregations to learn that just saying that they're welcoming, no, there's more to it than that. And the biggest thing that you learn as a congregation goes through this is that what you think your friend in the same pew thinks is totally opposite. I know when my congregation started going through that process initially, I was shocked that, yeah, we have a ton of support in the congregation, really almost 100%, but when it comes down to making the statements, putting flags up on the congregation, all of this stuff, all of a sudden the people weren't ready for that. You know, yeah, I want to be welcoming, but no, I don't want that there yet because I don't know how to do it. And all of a sudden I had to change my mindset because here I thought this person was all ready to go and she wasn't. So you can't assume your congregation is ready. You have to work together. You have to train. You have to figure out if the congregation even wants to go down that road. And if they're not ready, then you may have to step back and say, hey, we'll work on things, but you do it carefully so it does not divide a congregation.
But that's also how you have to come out to your friends. The friends you think might be accepting may not be the ones that are. And the ones that you think are never going to accept you have no issue.
Right.
So people are people. And we just have to be mindful that they need their time.
Right.
To kind of mull it over and say, where do I come down on this? And I think we have to keep pushing that acceptance there is really the only loving thing. You know, there are two feelings that most of us have that everything else comes from, love and fear. And the people don't accept out of some sort of fear. And right. We just keep responding with love.
And as you're doing that, the people who have the fear are watching. And eventually, when they feel safe, maybe come up to you or someone else that they know supports a gay and lesbian person. The one of the things I always used to say, ministry of presence.
Yeah.
To the gay people at the beginning that, you know, we have to be, if we want our church, we have to be in the congregations. As painful as it is, we have to be a ministry of presence. Even if we do nothing but go there, sit there, attend church, if no one ever speaks to us or does anything else, at least we're there and eventually somebody's going to say something. And I found that has worked. I've had some people in this area that have come up and have said, Alan, I've known you your whole life. I love you. I care about you, but I just can't accept that part of you. And it's like, okay, thank you for sharing. And she's, you know, the one lady said, I can't have you in my home anymore until I get this all figured out and all this. And I said, okay, fine. You know, you have the right to your feelings and your concerns and your home. You know where I'm at when you're ready to talk to me. And it was 2 or 3 years. And all of a sudden she came up and gave me a hug and she says, I need my Alan back. And we sat and we talked and now we're just wonderful. It's not always nice to hear someone say, hey, I don't want you in my life right now. Okay, fine. But that people have the right to say that. I had to learn not to take that personally. I had to give it back to them and say, okay, thank you for sharing your feelings. You know, I give their feelings back to them. I acknowledge them. I understand that they're theirs. but I can't carry it anymore. And I used to be a good one for carrying everything. It about killed me.
It will. If you hold on to it, because it's, and that's part of why it hurts so bad, because it's people who you thought would love you.
Yeah.
Who say, no, no. And it, I didn't change from who I was before you knew. I'm still me. But it makes a difference. Sometimes for a very long time, sometimes they never want you back in their life. And sometimes they say, and, you know, like, let's go have something to eat. Who cares?
Yeah. I have a cousin that she and I got into a very lengthy discussion. And she finally, she said, Alan, I've watched you your whole life. And she says, it just scares me that what if you're wrong, that you shouldn't be this way. And I just said, Elizabeth, it's real simple. I believe in a loving God, not a vindictive God. And my thought is, at the time of judgment, is I expect to hear two things. Well done, or at least you tried.
Yep.
And she says, that's it? I said, yeah, that's it. Because if we are following the guidance that we feel directed on, you know, using my faith belief system, I have felt very guided my whole life down a road that has brought me to this place and time. And I said, over the years, when I have prayed and prayed and prayed, take this away from me, take this away from me, and take this away from me, and instead of being taken away from me, I'm given more opportunities to serve, nurture, or heal, or share my story. And it finally gets to the point, okay, I get it, you know, and I'll just keep listening. I am never surprised when I need to share my story. I get this funny sensation inside of me that I've learned to acknowledge, be ready to share my story. And sometime within the course of a day, something will happen and I share my story. I've learned to accept that as a guidance for me.
Sure.
There are sometimes I say, really, right now, in the middle of everything that's going on, you're going to make me put this mantle on, you know, and share my story. And it's kind of funny, because without a doubt, before the end of the day, my story will have been shared, or I have shared with somebody, and I get it. This is my journey, and it's not been perfect. We are all flawed human beings.
Of course, speak for yourself.
I have at different times stepped back out of the light, you know, of doing a lot of things with Gala, especially the last few years. The younger people are taking over, and that's fine. But I'm always back there in the background. Get phone calls. Hey, you know, what do you think of this? Has this been done before? So I'm a background resource person, I think, more than anything else right now, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm also involved with the gay and lesbian community in my workplace. I'm part of the diversity committee at work. I enjoy going to different campgrounds that cater to the gay community during the summertime. It's a lot of fun. But I'm still out there, and when I am needed, you know, whatever gifts that I can offer the church, I will do that.
I have a story about my mother and acceptance, because when we finally talked about it face to face, my mom said, I always thought I did something wrong. And I said, Mom, you're not that powerful. This is my birthright from God. And I have learned to accept it, and I hope you can too, but you didn't do anything. This is who I was born to be. Because I certainly tried not to be that. but you know, that's where I find love.
Yeah.
Love always wins.
Yeah.
I believe that totally.
I do too.
Yeah. And I think if we are, when we put ourselves out there in faith, believing that, you know, God, okay, do what you want. Just let me know. Don't let me go down the road by myself. And I never have. I've never gone anywhere. I've been asked to go feeling alone. You know, I have to give up Alan being in control. My thing is, I take my problem kind of mentally in my hands and I throw it up in the air and say, fix it. And I have to let it go. And then but consciously be listening to an answer coming down at some point, some way down the road. Because sometimes the answer may be many years down the road before you get your answer. Sometimes it's right away.
Yeah.
Or sometimes God gets the baseball bat and bashes my head saying, will you please listen to me now? And yeah.
I've learned to say I don't need the baseball bat anymore. I will listen.
Well, but sometimes being dense and I get wrapped up in my head sometimes, it's like, oh, okay, sorry. I guess I wasn't paying attention, you know.
But I think when you've always had a faith, and I don't ever remember not talking to God, and God talks back. It's just in different ways. But I've always known when I needed to share my story and to share who I was. An interesting thing happened. I go to the pool 3 times a week for arthritis class, and Margaret goes. We go at separate times because I try and swim before class. And there happened to be a woman in class whose husband is a Baptist minister. And I was talking about Margaret, my partner, and she says, Margaret down there? I said, yeah. And we talked for a while about things. And, you know, it's made a difference in how she responds to us, because I always helped her with getting, they have lane markers, and I help her get over the lane marker. And she's just turned her ideas around about who I am. For a while, she wasn't quite sure. Was I going to be okay? Because, you know, I was a lesbian. And she's been very accepting, and it just is showing up and being who you are. And that has always been my goal since I came out. I want to be an example that they see that is quote unquote normal, not the people they see on TV who are wild and crazy, because most of us live very quiet lives and we're boring, you know? We go to work, we come home, we fix dinner. And they forget that because they see the ones that are trying to make a statement. And the truth is, we're just simple people. No different than anybody else.
I had that come up at one of the workshops where the one lady says, Alan, why is it we only see you at these workshops, nobody else, you know, shares the story? And I said, well, mainly because some people are not comfortable putting themselves out there yet. And she says, but you're Alan, the gay minister now. And, you know, that shouldn't be. I said, well, but I didn't put that label on me. You did. And I said, if I put all my hats on the table, you know, there's Alan, I'm a male, I'm a nurse, I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, I'm a son, I'm a grandson, I play the organ, I sing in a choir, I go camping, and da 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 da, and I just kept going on and on and on. And I said, and by the way, I'm gay. I said, none of those hats are all on at the same time. There might be 2 or 3 all going on at the same time, but the most often time that the gay hat is being seen by most people is when I'm in these workshops. Other than that, it's very much behind the scenes in my life. You know, occasionally, yes, I get called at work saying, hey, we have a crisis. We need you as a nurse, but we need you as a gay person being there to support this person and family. You know, so sometimes it is pulled into a scenario. But I said, you pay attention to the one hat and one hat only. You don't learn the rest of the person that's there. And she says, I guess I'm going to have to start looking at other hats for everybody then, right? And I said, yeah, just not me. It's the whole world. We only see one thing and we think we know everything, you know? And she says, and you play the organ? I didn't know that. And people turned and looked at her like, who played the start of this thing today? You didn't pay attention, you know? And she says, no, I guess I didn't, because I really didn't want to come to this workshop because I didn't think I'd learn anything, but I guess I have, you know. It was kind of hilarious.
I think that's why most of us who are open chose to be open, so that they would see regular day-to-day gay people, and certainly at work when I was open, if they needed somebody to come in and talk with someone. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, that's part of my ministry. Yeah. That's just part of it.
Yeah.
So,
I
told you we could talk and talk.
Well, we've been going for almost 2 hours.
You're going to have fun editing this, aren't you?
I mean, no, you guys have, I just want to thank you both for sharing from your heart. This was, you know, what I was hoping for, because I think I said in our little pre-conversation before we started to record, I think some people who maybe are my generation don't necessarily know the history super well, or we haven't heard some of these stories. I mean, I am new to the Community of Christ, so I certainly am new to stories like yours. My growing up and faith tradition that I grew up in is still on a very different trajectory. And so it's been beneficial for me to hear your stories and to just connect the dots on a very personal level to what has historically happened. And I think I mentioned that we are going to be airing an episode with Jerry Dale Jr. and then Parker Johnson to kind of bring us up to speed about Harmony, which is the merged organization of GALA and WCN. So I guess I would just be curious for our final thoughts is, you know, do you have hopes for Harmony, the organization, or hopes for the church? Do you think that, you know, we have said that we haven't necessarily arrived as far as being inclusive, and I fully, fully agree with that. But what are some of your hopes? And do you think that Harmony will carry forward the legacy of GALA? Have you seen that happen so far?
My first thought in that is we're dealing with a time where religion itself is struggling. Churches are closing in all denominations right and left. And unfortunately, Community of Christ is dealing with that too. So GALA/Harmony, I think, will still be an advocate for love, teaching, resources for the church at large until it truly is a church in harmony, if you want to put it that way. The other part of it is we're also growing up in a time where there are so many gay, lesbian, transgendered, bi, the whole gamut of letters there that I can never seem to get right anymore. There's resources for people today that never, ever existed for us back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s timeframe when we were growing up. And so having recently had a dialogue with a couple teenagers about, you know, don't get this pride stuff. You know, what is it? It's all it is a big party, la, 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 la. And I said, well, do you realize 50 years ago, none of this that you're seeing today even was thought about being in existence. oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about, la, 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 la. It's like they don't get it. They don't care about what happened in the past. Okay. Other people do remember and or are willing to listen and learn, and that's going to be important because things that we as a gala community learned over the years working with the church, we've built on those lessons, good, bad, and I think Harmony will do the same thing, but the biggest part of it is remembering what we did in the past, what works and doesn't work. And so I think that will continue. I think the nurturing, the love, the support that definitely goes on at the retreats will continue. Every retreat is different depending on who shows up. And the needs of the people that show up there dictate how retreats run also. I mean, I've had retreats in the past that we have an outline all set up, and then the mix of people showed up. And as you're listening, it's like, ooh, we need to shift here and make a focus a little more this direction, not quite so much that direction. And I think that works when we can do that for people. There's me.
I having been on the board for the last year and a half, I think it's taking a direction that is different than Gala did. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think the retreats are going to will always need to be an integral part so you can tell your story. Because that's how we heal, by telling our story and having people understand and support that story. So I think that's always going to be an important part. And certainly it's why, even though I'm not going to be on the board again, I have offered to be an ex officio kind of member and a history keeper to talk about where we came from. Because most people, I mean, I'm 67. When I came out, there was no support and people were getting beaten up and raped so they would turn straight. They don't see that. That isn't happening in the open the way it used to. They don't know how many people died so they can sit there and tell their story and not be afraid. And we need to respect that and remember that, because it was not an easy fight in the church to get where we are. And those of us who were around in the beginning, who stick around, are the only ones that can tell the story. And I think that's one of the important things about a podcast that can go on so they can hear the story. Alan and I aren't going to be here forever. Well, another 30 years maybe, but not forever. So luckily I have a lot of longevity in the women in my family. But
when I look back at kind of my journey through the gala years, I have been blessed to have been able to share my story with each of the presidents of the church that have been in place in my church journey. Multiple, oh gosh, I can't even think how many times I've been in congregations, districts, states, all over as a guest minister or part of a workshop team, where when it all is said and done, when you're done sharing, you feel like you've done something or at least planted a seed. And as exhausted as you are when you're done, pretty grateful that a person like me was allowed to do what I've done.
Well, and I think the welcoming church piece might be the next big push, that more of us go out and tell our stories and show up as the boring people we are, so that, and the gifted people we are. I mean, when I say boring, I mean, I don't I'm not as flamboyant. I am mouthy, though. But to just be who we are, because that we're just folks. We're all just folks trying to deal with our own stuff and need support. And it really never mattered to me whether it came from the church, as long as we had a group that we could go to and get support and healing and love.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, it was never as important to me whether the church accepted us. It was important to me to help heal the bruised and the brokenhearted, because I was one and I was mad.
But the crazy part of that is our church foundation taught us how to do that.
Yes. It was the very reason we could be who we are. Because
right.
We have that faith. And
you telling your stories impacted the life of the church and impacted what would happen in the future, which I think is remarkable.
And we really didn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us had to step back for a while, but, you know, I've never left. I just keep checking in and say, do you have it yet? Have you figured it out? And the church is kind of starting to figure it out.
Well, I just am so grateful for the time that we have spent together this evening. I think this is going to be really meaningful to have your stories live on, and the story of Gala and WCN. We did mention WCN a little bit. We might have to get some official representation of WCN on the podcast as well to go over that history. But I'm just really grateful for the fact that you've continued to share your stories. And I know that from my little neck of the woods, Gala is a big beacon of hope to what we would call Latter-day Seekers, LDS people who are interested in Community of Christ. And a lot of times they are coming from the LGBT community, or they're coming from coming from the framework that they want to raise their family in a church that will accept their kids, whoever they end up being. And that's one large reason why I felt comfortable being in Community of Christ, is when I learned about Gala and learned about the hard work that you all had done. And I could recognize that we still had a ways to go, but I could at least see that there had been movement and that there had been traction. And I was, that invited me to hop on board, I guess. So right. I'm just grateful for what you two and many, many, many others have shared and done in the sake of harmony, really, which kind of brings us into the modern day. So thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.